This is WHFR Dearborn, and it's time now for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. Let's get ready to dig deeper here into what's going on. This is, I guess, our election special for the year, since it's only 4 days before the election next Tuesday, November 8th. If you're registered to vote, I hope you will definitely consider voting. It is important. Even though it's not a presidential election year, very often these races are closer because not as many people vote, and therefore your vote actually has about three or four times more power to decide the outcomes. And so it's especially worthwhile, if you're looking at it pragmatically, to get out there to the polls and get your friends and neighbors and maybe help them with transportation to get out there and vote. And, talk about the issues, too, with your friends and neighbors and try to find out as much as you can. We're going to be going over the local papers today in between two special guests that we have. The first one coming up in just a second. But the problem is, and I've bemoaned this for years, is that neither of the two weekly papers in this town, that is the Press and Guide and the Times Herald, have any recommendations from their editorial position for how to vote on a proposal or for candidates that are running for any offices. And I'm doing my best to shame them here. We cannot do that at WHFR because, believe it or not, the Federal Communications Commission, in their wisdom, has said that non-commercial broadcast stations, radio and TV, may not make political recommendations. Okay, commercial stations can. So what are we, chopped liver? Come on, what do commercial stations know that we don't know? It seems to me they're all bought out by their advertisers. But I guess it's time for the disclaimer in the show, just to start off once every hour of a talk show here, we do this, that the opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College, not faculty, staff, students, or administrators. But I cannot express my opinion in terms of who I think should be voted in or how the proposal should wind up because FCC says we can't, just so you're clear about that one, all right? Still, we try to give you challenging ideas, and in fact, we have a challenger with us, a person who's not an incumbent but is on the ballot as one of five candidates for the Dearborn Heights City Council. And that is part of the election in Dearborn Heights this coming Tuesday. So I want to welcome Scott Craig to the WHFR Journal. Hey, Scott, how are you doing out there?
Oh, not too bad. How about yourself?
Okay. Got to boost whatever microphone you're on here. But, okay, tell us about yourself, Scott. Tell us, and if I can't hear you clearly, I'm going to switch to another microphone sitting over there. But give us some of your background.
Oh, well, I'm 25 years old. I was born in Dearborn at Oakwood Hospital. I lived the first 2 years of my life in Detroit. My family moved to Garden City when I was two. Lived there till I was 18 when I went off to college. Spent 3 years at Michigan State studying criminal justice. I switched my major to philosophy, transferred to Oakland University. Spent another year there, and since then I've been out in the workforce. I have a wife and a beautiful two-year-old daughter. A couple years ago we decided to make our home in Dearborn Heights, and that's where I'm at right now.
When you're a relatively young person compared to myself. So I think I said, first of all, I can't speak more highly about Oakland University, even though I graduated from there back in the last millennia, in the 1960s. And I had a lot of good friends who were majoring in philosophy there, and I know they still have a very highly qualified program. Interesting switch, though. Let me just ask you about this briefly. Criminal justice to philosophy?
I think like many young people, I went into college not 100% sure what type of career I wanted to pursue. And as I took a few elective classes, I happened to stumble upon a couple different courses, a philosophy course, Intro to Philosophy, and then a course entitled Myth, Self, and Religion. And between those two courses, that really, really sort of made clear what I did want to study in my future. So that made the switch to philosophy a little bit easier. I mean, it's a subject I'm very passionate about.
Well, as I think everybody should be, we actually have a talk show here on Mondays from 6 to 7 p.m. called the Monday Forum. And it's sort of an open slot for other local talk shows, but most of the time, we're right now in that time slot. We only have one locally hosted show, and the other weeks I grab podcasts from different places on the internet, ideas expressed from one source or another. And one of them is the wonderful Philosophy Talks program that is actually on the air on the radio in the San Francisco area. And so whenever they get a really exciting topic of some sort, I toss it in there for our listeners to be part of, because you know, it's wonderful to respond to the daily needs. You have to do that, you know, as the winds blow you back and forth for job and money and health issues. Philosophy, in fact, is how to develop a mind that thinks past that and can plan the future, perhaps, in a way that might have some, I don't know, ethical or moral basis, too, that, you know, it's awfully hard to think about those things on a daily basis, minute to minute, if you don't already have some discipline or training or overview about how to approach that. So I commend you for that, for jumping in there. And at Oakland University, too. Not a bad choice. But anyway, what did you mention your current employment?
Yeah, I currently work for a company called Disposal and Recycling Technologies. Mm. We do recycling, and we actually produce ethanol there as well. And again, to your point, it's pretty much unrelated to the discipline of philosophy. But, you know, it's a type of situation where I can apply, you know, the tactics learned in philosophy to my everyday life by, you know, making the plant more efficient, sure, and stepping a little bit more into management versus just labor.
And I can't think of anything more important than in trying to recycle and reuse, reduce in whatever way is possible. Ecology is not just a one-day-a-year thing, as it started in 1970. It's something we all have to consider all the time. And is this a big company or a small startup? Has it been around for a while?
It's been around since 2005.
That's so relatively new.
It's relatively small, but we are expanding, and sure, we're hoping to be a part of the push to further a sustainable type of economy.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a very valuable and important endeavor to be involved in, along with many others, of course, but something that wasn't really thought of as, you know, years ago we were just dumping trash in a in a heap somewhere, and now those locations are pretty much filled up, and some of that trash is not biodegraded, and it's coming back to haunt us in a variety of ways, whether it's a toxic residue or you know, other consequences. And you can only make so many skiing hills out of mounds of trash, you know, and then you just don't need any more ski hills. There's some examples. I think there's one still down in Woodhaven that was actually where they dumped the trash for years and years, and then they got the money to actually put soil on it somehow, and they made it into a small ski facility. And I can't imagine that would work that well in Woodhaven. But nonetheless, you got to do something with it. And it's part of the wave of the future to understand better how to take care of our responsibilities to the planet, I guess. Okay, so a city council person, how do you understand that position, its requirements and responsibilities?
Well, I think any person running for city council really needs to be in tune with the city. And by the city, I don't mean City Hall. I mean the residents. You know, what do people want when they look at Dearborn Heights, for instance? I know when Stephanie and I moved into Dearborn Heights, we wanted to move into a strong community. We wanted to know our neighbors. We wanted to feel comfortable taking walks at night. And I think these are the types of issues that the average resident is concerned with. You know, they want a nice city. They want nice neighbors. And so I think the better in tune one is with, you know, the feelings of the average resident, probably the better city council person one would make.
And if you're at all an activist, if you do have some ideas about changes or where you stand on issues, you can make a difference. I mean, that's where the power is, along with the mayor's position, of course. You're working on budgets and so on. So how many hours a week do you think you're going to put in if you are elected?
Well, I think bare bones for the position requirement would probably be 10 to 12. But I think I'm approaching this from a bit different perspective. I don't see answers and solutions emanating from City Hall and then filtering down to the residents. You know, obviously Dearborn Heights, like most of the surrounding municipalities, is in a bit of financial trouble. And I think if we're going to work our way out of this trouble, the solutions are going to have to come from the residents themselves. Whether that means residents getting together and organizing into, you know, local block by block, small government type organizations, or, you know, local residents coming together and, you know, proposing solutions to city council and to the mayor. I think, you know, that really reflects what this nation was founded upon, you know, self-government, government by the people. And I think the bigger role that the residents themselves can take in these trying times, the better chance we'll have of turning this around.
And I want to commend you, especially because, as you indicated to me earlier before the show, is that this is your first effort to run for a political office. And, you know, what were some of the challenges in your head? I mean, most people don't run for political office. Obviously, you see there's a chance to make a difference. And as you just said, reflect the community and answers from the grassroots up. And that's actually kind of unique. I don't hear that from most candidates running for most offices, although I thought it was part of our democratic system, representative system. In any event, what was that final decision like for you? Was it you had to figure out your time commitments? And, you know, sometimes they do call you in the middle of the night, I understand, if you're elected.
No, absolutely. And, you know, in making the decision, I knew first and foremost that I wanted to be involved. I wanted to use whatever knowledge and skills that I've built up over the course of my life to benefit, you know, our community and, you know, everyone around us. And so I went over, you know, some practical options, and the biggest one that made itself apparent was, you know, first and foremost, maybe getting on city council and taking it from there.
Yeah, it's hard to get the word around and your name around, which is why WHFR for the last 3 weeks we've tried to schedule the challengers for the office, people who are not incumbents, not already in office, but you already know them, or you should anyway, and the new ideas, you don't get a chance to hear that easily in our political system unless people have a ton of private money that they can invest. I think you indicated that a mailing is maybe $10,000 to $15,000 to get to all the residents of Dearborn Heights,
well,
for example.
A total campaign with signs, mailings, you know, a lot of door-to-door commitment pamphlets and everything like that would be $10,000 to $15,000. And, you know, in my current position, I don't have the resources to raise that type of money. And it's not just that. You know, as a first-time candidate, I was considering it, and I didn't actually feel comfortable asking people, especially in these tough economic times, to donate, you know, $100, $200, whatever the amount may be. So I decided that, you know, I wouldn't raise any money for my campaign, which I haven't. I've gone to a few public speaking engagements. I spoke with the other candidates at a forum that the League of Women's Voters presented.
I was just going to mention that if you're part of that video, I know that's being run on appropriate government channels on cable in both Dearborn Heights and Dearborn, too. So, so that's an important thing for people to get a chance to look at that before the election. If they haven't heard more than your words today, we are talking to Scott Craig, who is one of the... This is live radio, folks. At least I think I'm alive after I'm getting my fall cough now. It's a seasonal thing. Scott is one of the five candidates for the three positions on the Dearborn Heights City Council, and two incumbents, and Scott and two other challengers are in that picture. So whatever you can do, read the newspapers, take a look at that League of Women Voters video, and try to make your best decisions there. According to Mayor Poletko in last Sunday's Press and Guide, this is the 30th of October, he said very frankly for the reporter, Headley override proposal must pass. The city is in that much of a financial problem, or will be shortly. Do you feel that that is the major solution? Do you, in fact, expect to support it yourself, or are you going to let voters just make up their own minds about that?
Well, I do support the Headley override, but I wouldn't go so far as to call it a solution. At best, it's just delaying some very difficult decisions we're going to have to make. Essentially, what has happened with the real estate bubble popping in 2008, the home values have gone down exponentially, as everybody knows. And when this happens, the property values drop as well. So the city is not receiving nearly the amount of taxes that it used to. So there's not enough money to go around. So I believe that the Headley ride, while it should pass, but we're going to have to look to other solutions to our financial problems, because I don't see this economy miraculously turning around here in the next few years unless the residents of Dearborn Heights, Michiganders, and citizens all over the country decide to come together and create the solutions. I can't be clear enough when I say that the solutions are going to have to come from the people, not from our appointed or elected officials.
Yep, that's pretty much the same story in Dearborn. We don't technically, for some reason, have to do a Headley override, but we are asking for, in fact, a little bit more millage than Dearborn Heights, 3.5 mils, although just for 5 years. There's a cutoff in our proposal. And Mayor O'Reilly here, as you may know too, just like Mayor Poletko, have said quite clearly this is not even the answer. You know, this will not hold us. Of course, property values, as you mentioned, have been going down, and they're expected to continue going down for another year or two. We hope less. We hope it stops, but who knows? And of course, that means that people have been saving on the taxes they've had to pay the last couple years. It's true, in a tight money time, any money going out is money you would rather not spend. But this just tries to make up some of the dollars that that people have not paid into the city for the last couple of years because of the lower property costs. Again, people have to decide based on their own criteria whether or not they can afford it. But the consequences are going to be pretty severe, according to Mayor Poletko, in terms of things you will absolutely have to cut. I know they've already laid off at least one full-time fireman in Dearborn Heights, full-time fireman laid off, and you know, response times will be down in both cities if these don't pass. But it's a difficult challenge, certainly. Dearborn Heights is certainly different than Dearborn. Dearborn, we have two main sort of tracks through Michigan Avenue, both east and west, that could be called downtown areas that have a variety of stores and do bring in some good tax base that way. Dearborn Heights, what would you say the main street is? I've never been clear on that. Ford Road?
Ford and Warren also has a fair amount of business going on there, but I believe you're correct. I mean, there's no real main downtown area that generates a lot of revenue.
So it's more difficult, certainly, to attract new business in Dearborn Heights, just because you don't already have that sort of cluster or consolidation. I think doesn't mean you don't have the space for it, certainly, but it's going to be a challenge. I know Dearborn. I think they're in the final days of selling off property in Florida. They have a retirement facility that they've operated down there for many years, and they finally put it up for sale a year ago, and looks like they're going to get $6 million for it, which is not all they could in a better market, but at least, you know, you've got to unburden yourself from things like that in these difficult times. So you think it's worthy of support right now, but that there's a lot more that has to be done. We have trying to give you 15, 20 minutes, and we're at the 20-minute part. Scott, it's now time for you to tell us the reasons why voters should give you, Scott Craig, their vote, or at least one of their three votes for the office of city council. By the way, folks, you know, if you want to be cagey about this, whenever there's five people running, you don't have to vote. You don't have to use all three of your votes. If you think one person is especially qualified, you can just vote for them. I'm just saying that's, I don't know if you want to play games with that, but you can vote for three of the five candidates. And Scott, why should they give you their vote?
Well, I believe I'm approaching the problems facing Dearborn Heights and other municipalities from a very different perspective. As we mentioned earlier, I do have a background in philosophy. I've studied a lot of history, and I feel like the problems that we are facing now haven't just sprung upon us out of the blue. I feel like there's been a big lead up toward the issues that we're facing, and I'm not sure how well known this is out there amongst the general population and amongst other people. But I feel like, you know, through my training in philosophy and my study of history, I have a broader perspective, almost a broader worldview, a very in-depth historical perspective, where I'm not just considering the problems facing the city of Dearborn Heights on an island somewhere. I'm considering the problems facing Dearborn Heights, the greater metropolitan area, Michigan, the United States, and the world as a whole. And that's really the approach that I'm taking to this, is that, you know, this isn't a Dearborn Heights problem. This is a human problem. And as humans, we all have to get together and decide how we're going to approach these next few pivotal years in our history.
Well said. And last but not least, when and where can citizens acquire more information about your candidacy? Is there a website or a phone number or an address? I suspect 4 days before the election, there's not going to be another speaking engagement.
No, there's not. But they can call me directly. I'll go ahead and give out my phone number. It's 313-348-7128. And if you want to get a little bit more familiar with some of my viewpoints, you can go ahead and read anything by Thomas Jefferson.
I've heard of him.
He's my favorite. And then anything by, not anything, but some of John Locke. Anything John Locke has to say about the role of government in society would be a good starting point to get a feel for the direction I'm coming at this from.
I know when I was at Oakland University, we had to read John Locke as part of Western institutions, and it was that was amazing course. First of all, most people don't know what the real sort of historical and philosophical groundings of our society are. Well, I wish you good luck at getting your message out and getting people to understand what you have to offer for Dearborn Heights City Council, and as a Dearborn resident, I wish the best of Dearborn Heights, too. It's going to be difficult times for all of us. Thank you so much for being on the Journal today, Scott.
Well, thank you.
And we'll be back with more of the new WHFR Journal on the station making waves in just a moment.
WHFR.FM, your commercial-free public radio station, is having a fall benefit concert Saturday night, November 12th, 7 to 10 p.m., at Andiamo Dearborn. Enjoy an elegant evening of live jazz at the beautiful Andiamo on Michigan Avenue in Dearborn, featuring flautist Willona Green. also performing Detroit song Ronnie, Sport Coat Overton. Admission donation is only $5 at the door. All proceeds to benefit your public radio station, WHFR.FM. Food and drinks will be available at an additional charge. That's Saturday night, November the 12th, 7 to 10 p.m. at Andiamo, Dearborn. For more information, call 313-845-9676. That's 313-845-9676.
Many big-time newspapers have run mocking pieces by political pundits about the Occupy movement, denigrating it as confused and chaotic. In USA Today, for example, right-wing pundit Cal Thomas recently opined that, to the extent anyone can understand their core message, the occupiers apparently despise business and capitalism. Well, no, Cal. They despise corporate greed and political corruption, and their core message is really quite clear. The bankers, bosses, and others who make up the richest 1% of our society are further enriching themselves by knocking down the 99%. Maybe an up-close example of this would help Thomas see what the majority of Americans who support the Occupy movement are experiencing. Look no further than the very newspaper chain that's paying him to pontificate so cluelessly. Gannett, which owns USA Today and about 80 other papers, is a financial and journalistic wreck. In the past 6 years, its stock price has collapsed by 750%. It has fired 20,000 employees, stripped its newsrooms of their ability to do serious reporting, and cut the pay of remaining journalists while insisting that they work longer hours with less support. Craig Dubow, Gannett's CEO since 2005, presided over this debacle. He's now out, but he wasn't fired, as you and I would have been for such a failure. No, no. Instead, Gannett's board of directors handed Dubow, get this, $37 million as a go-away gift. This cushion of luxury came on top of the $16 million he was given in salary and bonuses during the past 2 years, as those workers who produced the product were being dumped and the corporation was tanking. This is Jim Hightower saying, so, Mr. Thomas, that's the reason so many are in the streets and in support of what the occupiers are saying. Can you relate?
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
The theater arts program at Henry Ford Community College will present a stage adaptation of the beloved fairy tale Sleeping Beauty, directed by HFCC theater instructor and award-winning director Christopher Bremer. Sleeping Beauty runs each weekend at the Adrey Auditorium, which is located in the McKenzie Fine Arts Center on HFCC's main campus, from November 4th through November 20th. Showtimes are Fridays and Saturdays at 7 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. Ticket prices are $12 for adults, $10 for students with valid ID, and $6 for students ages 12 and under. Ticket prices for groups of 10 or more are $5 per seat. For further information about Sleeping Beauty or for reservations, please call 313-845-9817. That's 313-845-9817.
America's power elites on Wall Street and in Washington have been stunned.
And we'll definitely continue with that line. It's a second comment from Jim Hightower, but we have our second guest here in the studio. And so we will come back to Jim Hightower and his feelings about the power elite. And that comment, by the way, especially talks about where does all this public anger come from? And he simply, for the last half of it, and you're going to hear it in a little while, he just reads the headlines that are already in the papers for the last 6 months. And that's what people can get angry about. It's right there in the headlines. It's not something that people just make up in their sleep or something. In any event, don't forget, too, right before that little snippet, Sleeping Beauty, the great children's theater production here at Henry Ford Community College, begins today. And we'll continue with evening and weekend and evening presentations over the next couple of weeks, all the way until, I think, the 20th. So that's a very, very exciting production, and it's certainly suitable for the whole family. Hope you can get here in person. There's a lot of programs, a lot of presentations during the day just for school groups who have already signed up. They're going to bus them in here. And so for some of the children in our community, they're going to get it directly that way. Okay, let's go to our second guest in the studio today. She's not running for office, although maybe she is. I don't know, but I think she should. She's so talented and articulate. She's the head of the Henry Ford Community College Counseling Division, and is that called Vice President, Associate Dean or something?
These days, Associate Dean, yeah.
They keep making the names more highfalutin, and probably increase your responsibilities even more for the same pay. But Diane Green, you're here especially. Let's get the important stuff out of the way. Next Monday right here, 3 days away, is one of our non-traditional career workshops. And we've talked on this show about them in the past. And this one is specifically for women to consider jobs in non-traditional areas, areas that, let's not say there was gender bias, but there was sort of a stereotype out there that women, they just couldn't see themselves in those positions in the past. But in fact, there's real job possibilities there. This program is going to be Monday, and it's going to be here in the Student Center building. Gee, they could look in the windows of WHFR while they're here.
That's right.
Same building, but it's going to be held in the 5101 restaurant in the morning. It's a morning session, and does it start early? Ooh.
Bright and early, 7:30 a.m. We have registration and continental breakfast. And then we move right into the workshops that we have set up as a part of the seminar for Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And we've shaped it out a little differently this year. In the past, we pulled in a wider range of program areas here at HFCC. This time out, we looked at where women participating in previous seminars express the greatest interest. Mm-hmm. So those areas were our criminal justice program, and we have several programs that come out through the criminal justice program.
You know, there's a lot of specialties in there. People, when they hear criminal justice, they think mainly of policemen, persons, if you will. But in fact, there's many things that keep the system going that are tied to our court system and the probation system and maintaining the prisons. So there's a lot of very interesting adjuncts to or support persons to what we normally think of as police work.
Yes.
As well as, of course, helping them to become a police officer. Or I think do they have a certificate also for investigators?
Well, it's that one has been kind of morphed into one of the other programs, but they have the police criminal justice curriculum. They have probation and parole, and then they have the information assurance, which is the newest program, and that's really training individuals to work in the IT area, and oftentimes those individuals will find work in Homeland Security and in other agencies that are concerned with protecting our computers and making sure that they're not inappropriately compromised.
I love the name of that program, Information Assurance.
Yes.
I wish I could get more assured information. It's hard to find out anything these days, unless you're listening to the WHFR Journal, of course. So it's going to be a full morning, but there's presentation four or five areas besides criminal justice. I'm looking at the story here from the Times Herald, the computer information people, of course. Women can be nerds, too.
Yes. And
that's a loving term, of course.
Nerds in the area of network administration. Mm. Computers, straight up computers. They have a number of certificate programs that are woven in there, and they also do some interesting things in coupling up with the business program. And then, of course, our hospitality program, and there we're looking at culinary, hospitality, restaurant management, and they have maybe four or five certificate programs that come through that program as well.
Besides actually meeting for this in our 5101 restaurant, which is one of our functioning outreach laboratories for student learning in culinary arts, the hospitality area, and I hope everybody knows what that means. That's running hotels, motels, and that's
restaurants
and restaurants too, of course. Yeah, as part of culinary arts. So there, I think these sessions that you present, these seminars, are extremely valuable for because I don't think they're doing as much career education in the high schools these days. Plus, programs keep changing. New specialties are needed, and Henry Ford Community College is usually right at the top of trying to provide the education you need for that new specialty.
Absolutely.
In one area or the other. So this is, again, this coming Monday, November 7th, 7:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., and they're going to give you a continental breakfast and maybe lunch?
Free lunch.
Oh, boy. And the cost of all this is also
free.
Free. Oh, my goodness. So we hope, folks, that you can spread the word about this. If you're not directly interested, if you know someone that either wants to find a new direction in a career, and this is especially for this time for women to consider non-traditional careers. I don't know if any men would be turned away, but areas that women might not consider at the outset, hadn't thought of, but are totally valid and important career areas that they could get a really nice job from if they're good enough, of course.
Yeah.
It's always competitive these days with every area.
And I think it's important also to point out that this is a Perkins-funded program that we're presenting.
That's a federal grant program.
Yes, it is.
It's still around. That's good.
It still is around.
Amazing.
And the program is designed to support students who are pursuing areas of study in career and technical education. And, of course, all of these areas fall within those parameters.
Now, if possible, you recommend people contact Brenda Redinger to let them know you're coming, but they could just do walk-ins starting at 7:30 in the morning next Monday. Brenda Redinger, folks, that's R-E-D-I-N-G-E-R. I can give you a phone number, but I think it might be easier. B. Redinger, so that's the letter B, and then R-E-D-I-N-G-E-R at hfcc.edu. An email to her would be fine, too. The phone number is 845, which it is for almost everything here at the college, 9617. So if you give Brenda a call, let her know you're coming, that would be great, because they do have limited space. They can't, you know, I think 5101 probably holds 80 people, 100 people.
Yeah. Maximum, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
So so it wouldn't hurt to give a call and make sure you have a seat for that. But come on in if you're available and would like to explore a new career option. Again, not just for younger people, but older people too, and especially for women to consider these non-career job choices, and especially computer information systems, criminal justice, and hospitality and culinary arts this time, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So we look forward to having folks join us Monday. And one of the other things is we are giving out a lot of great free prizes. So we're going to have
door prizes, so-called.
Yes, door prizes, raffling them off.
If you need a new door, folks, come on by for that. I could use a new door. Anyway, not making jokes about it, it's a great thing. So I hope our listeners will tell others about that opportunity on Monday. Again, it's called Imagine the Possibilities, Non-Traditional Careers for Women, right here on the main campus of Henry Ford Community College in our 5101 restaurant in the Student Center. And 7:30 start time.
Mm.
Yeah, don't miss it.
Bright and early.
As long as I have the head of the counseling department here, Diane Green, tell me about winter semester enrollment. Some people just got through Halloween. And in fact, on Halloween day itself, you started enrolling for winter starting in January.
That's correct.
Okay.
Started at 12:01 a.m.
If they are a current student or have taken classes here at the college, can they just simply proceed to online registration?
And we're encouraging students to do that. We're really moving students towards doing their work online. The courses are listed in the system, so they can actually go online, www.hfcc.edu, sign in to WebAdvisor, use their appropriate sign-in information. You can look at the classes. You can actually now build a schedule in, and what the system will do will then print out for you or display on the screen a series of schedules that will work based on the classes and the times you've indicated. And then all they have to do is just plug in the classes and register.
So because of that that presentation, they can make sure, or does the system make sure they don't have any conflicts?
The system actually checks for that.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Wish we had that years ago.
Right.
No, I was recommending this like 20 years ago here at the college, since I've been around real long, when I was the department head of what they called then performing arts. And I knew at that time, even, this is in the 90s, that Oakland Community College had such a system in place. And it was just real embarrassing that we couldn't get to that. But we're here now. So what's the difference? Okay, from now on, we have that that kind of. But we really have invested here at the college a huge amount of money in our computer and online resources over the years, and they've done it carefully. And it's important to make sure that things are going to work well, as well as our online learning too. Increased radically. Any special procedures for first time students considering coming here for academic credit?
Well, we've launched our new advising program, so new students coming in, they complete the admission process, which is completing their application, paying the application fee, taking the placement test unless they have ACT scores or AP scores that will permit them to bypass the placement.
So a graduation certificate from a high school is not enough to avoid those placement tests.
They must have a high school diploma or a GED. And once they've completed the assessment.
But you're saying even with those, though, they need placement
tests.
They
still take the placement test. That's required unless they have ACT scores with the appropriate cutoffs or AP scores.
Those are two other tests that they could take in high school.
And then they are referred to an advisor on a walk-in appointment basis. And our advisors are doing course placement from their test scores and talking a little bit to them about their program, what they're wanting to pursue, and then actually putting the classes on the registration form. So when they leave the advisor, they will have a registration form that outlines the appropriate courses that they would be registering for the winter semester. I'm encouraging students to try to do this early. It is better than later. Classes close as students wait and wait and wait. So we want them to get in and be able to have a good selection of courses.
Right. The classes they want to take the most at the times that they're best able to sign up for them, of course.
And new students need to, if they have not already applied for financial aid, you need to have done it yesterday. So you need to do that very quickly because you want that in place as
well. The financial aid application itself has to be forwarded to the federal government, too, for checking, doesn't it? Depending if they're going to be asking for work study, that is jobs on campus and so on.
But that's all online now.
Oh, that's good. Okay, that's great. They don't have to get the physical document. They can just jump online for it. But it takes, I think, a minimum, what, about 2 to 3 weeks, if not 6 to 7 weeks, which is what it used to take. But I don't know how the processing is going these days. But
well,
the counseling division. Is financial aid under counseling now?
Oh, no.
No, please,
that's
not that.
That's Kevin Culler.
Okay.
I'll let Kevin
okay,
have
Kevin
his,
can
his
talk
area.
Sometime.
That's right.
But but I do know, yes, you have to plan ahead for financial aid. And it might say, well, I don't think I qualify. Well, you don't know until you apply. And we have many students that discover jobs on campus at minimum wage, which is at least $7.50 or something more an hour right now. And they could slide them in between their classes or after their classes on a day, and they don't they don't even understand that possibility, and then they find out, I didn't ask for them to qualify me for work study when they did the aid application because they didn't think about it at all. And then it takes an extra time to get that qualification, a week or two, and they can't start working.
I don't think it takes a long time. I think it depends on at what point the student decides that they want to be considered
for the
work study.
Okay, right,
again,
yes.
Mm-hmm. I think the sooner students begin this process with their financial aid, the better they are in terms of getting their package mapped out in the way that they're interested in receiving the funding.
Exactly. I brought up a story last week that involved counseling, and actually I made some opinionated comments about one of our Board of Trustees members because of comments that she happened to make after it was brought up. But it said that there may soon be an advising policy in place that would require students, before they took the same class a third time, to get advice from a counselor. Is that in place now? Will that be in place? I don't think the Board of Trustees were against that. So I don't understand. Was that just informing them? Is there a phase-in? Does that to be voted on here at the college?
It was taken to the board.
Right.
And I believe that was at the last board meeting.
Right. That's what we reported.
That was presented. I think it passed, but I'm not 100% sure.
It didn't say it didn't, but
yeah.
there were comments from... from people that I guess some of the board members were surprised that so many students, and I don't know if you know the numbers or the percentages, that take the same class more than once, assuming they're trying to pass it for the first time, get a C or better. I mean, you could take a class a second or third time, I guess, to try to get a higher grade if you were, you already got a passing grade, but you wanted, let's say, an A instead of a C, so we do allow that. But more than twice would require advice from a counselor, although apparently, according to the way that was worded in the paper, they could still do it if they wanted to, but they still got to talk to the counselor first about, is that the appropriate way to
proceed.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right.
But there's another variable that has to be factored in as well. And with new financial aid regulations that were put in place July 1, the feds are looking at limiting the number of times that students can repeat a course and use financial aid to pay for it.
So that's really a federal government requirement
as well.
Kicking down to us, yes.
Yes. And I think that students who have attempted a course twice and continue to have difficulty really do need to sit down and talk with the counselor to really explore what's happening in that course, whether or not there's additional assessments that maybe need to take place to better determine where the student needs to be. We like to bring faculty in that discussion. What recommendations, is faculty making as it relates to the students' needs and what's happening with them in the classroom?
Yeah, I can think of all kinds of issues that need to be reviewed with a student trying to take a course more than twice, certainly, because there's so many other options. And number one, maybe they don't really need that class for the program they're interested in. Number two, why don't they take a different teacher if it's an approach or an attitude issue, which is, it's nothing wrong with the teacher. I was concerned, and I'll just express it to you, and maybe I won't mention the board member's name again, but one of the board members brought up after this presentation, well, some teachers are just probably too tough. We want a list produced. We should have a list. They didn't say they want it. They said we should have a list produced of teachers that are constantly failing everybody. And then I was thinking, and I said on the show, what about a list of the teachers that are passing everybody all the time? I mean, both of them are not really understandable, either approach. Mm-hmm. And yet, there's many reasons why that can occur. Depends on the class, depends on the overall requirements set by the department. It's not something that I think the board really should be looking at here in terms of simple numbers.
Right. And you also have to look at the variables as it relates to the student's own personal issues.
Mm-hmm.
Students oftentimes get in classes with the best of intent. They may, in fact, start off doing extremely well in the class. And something happens at home. Something happens in their personal lives.
Mm-hmm.
So those variables also have to be looked at and taken into consideration when having that discussion with a student. So as you say, there are those academic pieces that need to be looked at, but there are also those personal issues that need to be discussed with the student as well.
Because we have a lot of fine teachers here at Henry Ford Community College.
Excellent
teachers. And in fact, many students coming out of high school are shocked at how rigorous some of the educational requirements are for certain classes. But, well, they should be, I think, in
this
some cases.
This is higher education.
Their high school never gave them an idea of how much reading they need to do and how much writing and what quality the writing needs to be. Even if they sort of go through those placement tests, they may not have experienced that kind of intensity before. And that there is kind of, they talk about a great divide between rich and poor. There's a big divide between a valuable and appropriate college education and most high school educational experiences. That's my personal opinion, is that there's a big leap there in commitment and intensity on the part of the student and the teachers.
Mm-hmm,
and,
mm-hmm.
Of course,
oh, and I agree.
If you pay, you pay your money for college, and it certainly isn't cheap these days, you expect a great teacher, but a rigorous program, too, that's not going to force you to learn. But if you want to succeed, you're going to have to put the time in on your part, too.
I think it's
that transition from high school, too, that's the big shock. And I know you have many orientation sessions and many ways you try to treat that in the counseling area. But I'm glad that we have that chance for students to see the advisor if they're trying to, you know, take the class so many times. We did have a person take the WHFR staff training class, and this was about 10 years ago, and he kept failing. And he I think it was 6 times he finally passed.
Wow.
But he just barely passed. He still had very weak skills. He never got a DJ show because he wasn't quite good enough for that. I mean, our staff training class can't do everything even 6 times over. But he just wanted to complete the class. It was sort of a point of honor.
Yeah.
To be part
a
of the staff.
Goal.
It was a personal goal. And it's only
it.
1 hour credit, as long as he had the time to do it. So, I tried to advise him and tell him that, you know, you have certain problems with speaking and attitude and other things that, you know, is going to hold you back. But, you know, I guess he... I don't know how well he did on other programs here at the college, and I wasn't advising overall. Last but not least, and I got to make some final comments about the election, but academic advising, what is that? I saw a big sign on the entrance door to the technology building, or no, it's not, it's the little
instructional
services building, whatever, at the front of the college here. Is that something for people after they're admitted?
It's what we're looking at is expanding on the services that we are making available to students, and this is going to roll out in support of our new registration central welcome center that will end up being in the old SME building.
When's it going to open? January?
Well, no, we're looking at
next summer, maybe
move in April, March, April.
Okay.
I'm thinking the goal. And what we want to do is have individuals there in that facility who will be solely focused on assisting students in identifying appropriate courses. Counselors, yes, we will continue to do advising. We will be working with our current and former students, students who may be on probation, academic dismissal, financial aid probation.
Mm-hmm.
We will continue to do career development and, of course, personal counseling. But we needed some individuals trained to be on that front line to do straight advising and assisting students in appropriate selection of courses for the semester, that first semester for which
especially
they're registering.
Well, I think you've developed a great system. I don't know if everybody coming to the college, unless they've looked at the website heavily, realizes these many, many extra resources that they can avail themselves of, some of which now in counseling they're required. required to do, but I hope they pay attention and take benefit from all of the ways that they can get more knowledge about acquiring the education.
Absolutely. Just to jump in on the other kinds of services that are available, we have our Career Resource Center to support students who are undecided about goals and direction. We also offer a one-credit-hour career exploration course to assist students in making those decisions. And we have an outlay of tremendous courses: stress management, life work planning, college 101, college success, all designed to help students to make really good decisions about their careers, their goals, and just better understanding themselves.
Some of those classes may be more important than certain other required classes, but I'm not going to mention anything specifically. Everybody's got their own preferences, whether they like astronomy or geology or whatever. But some of the basics, you can improve yourself by actually taking those relatively short experiences and learning. In fact, right now I don't know if you mentioned it, but there's a test anxiety series.
John Carroll.
That's in
John
process.
John Carroll conducts that every semester.
If you feel you get freaked out every time you have to sit down and take a test, there are ways to go and find a way to relax or get beyond or turn that anxiety into creative energy, let's say. And it's kind of like stress management too, but directed towards the test taking thing. Mm-hmm. And he's been doing that for many years.
Probably about 20.
I think it's so useful that there are answers for some of these more difficult challenges in higher education, and you're providing a lot of them. Thank you, Diane, for being on the Journal today.
Thank you for having me.
And I hope everybody will remember what we talked about first. The Non-Traditional Career Seminar for Women. This is coming Monday, November 7th, right here on the main campus, HFCC. If you want to get in touch with the counseling department and let them know you're coming, that would be fine. B. Redinger, letter B, R-E-D-I-N-G-E-R at HFCC.edu. So thanks very much, Diane, and we're going to try to squeeze in our commentator, Jim Hightower.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome.
America's power elites on Wall Street and in Washington have been stunned by the sudden surge of the Occupy movement. Some 600 U.S. communities have Occupy groups, thousands of middle-class people have taken to the streets, and recent polls show that nearly 6 out of 10 Americans support what the protesters are saying and doing. Why is this happening, wail Wall Street bankers, CEOs, and their pet politicos? What is upsetting all these people? You'd think that the super-rich could afford to buy a clue, but apparently not. So, to help them grasp the situation, I've gathered a mess of news clips from just the past few weeks that pretty much spells it out for them. They needn't read the actual stories, just scan the headlines. Better yet, I'll do it for them. No need to thank me. I'm always delighted to edify the rich. Headline: Slumping Wages, Rising Health Costs Cause Strain. Top Earners Double Share of Nation's Income. Snapshot of Poverty Surge in the Suburbs. Banks to Make Customers Pay Debit Card Fee. Record high 4.5 million have not worked in a year or more. House GOP spending plan cuts money for job training. U.S. income levels sink, leaves fragile consumers in a bind. Outsized severance packages continue for executives. More new poor going hungry. Banks are awash in cash. Bank of America to cut 30,000 jobs. This is Jim Hightower saying, even a Wall Street banker ought to be able to understand the message that these headlines are delivering. Such daily headlines reveal the depth of inequality and rank injustice that's propelling the Occupy uprising. As we say in Texas, even a dog knows the difference between being stumbled over and being kicked. America's middle class and the poor are tired of being kicked, and now they're kicking back. This is just the start.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
On November 9th at approximately 2 p.m. Eastern, the Federal Emergency Management Agency will conduct a nationwide test of the emergency alert system. It will be heard on radio and seen on local cable and satellite TV.
As the federal, state, tribal, territorial, and local governments prepare for and test their capabilities, this event serves as a reminder that everyone should establish an emergency preparedness kit and emergency plan for themselves, their families, communities, and businesses. Visit FEMA.gov for more information.
That's the theme song from Highway 61, which is going to be starting up in just a moment or two. We're waiting for the arrival of Joanne, our DJ, our blues music director, and that just started playing there as I was talking to Diane Green from the HFCC Counseling Department on her way out the door. Okay, so what do we need to tell you? Well, first of all, in terms of the Times Herald and the Press and Guide locally, they don't have any recommendations in them from their editorial staff about how to vote. So hopefully you've been reading about and you've been watching the few debate videos that are on cable TV in Dearborn, Dearborn Heights, and perhaps elsewhere. And, in Dearborn, I've only gotten one mailing from one candidate for school board. We don't have any council elections this year. Mary Petchlikoff sent a postcard. And it's actually, not... That's not full information right there. But I met Mary, and I like Mary and all that, but I'm just saying is that it's hard to compare with the other people if the other people also didn't send a postcard to talk about the issues. The only thing that's in the papers that you could look at is, and I highly recommend it and can't go on in detail about it, but from Press and Guide this last Wednesday, they have the editorial opinion from Morris Goodman. Yes, he's their liberal spokesperson, but he has an editorial opinion of why vote November 8th. And, and he points out about the importance of the issues, and he points out about how important your vote is, especially in a election, an so-called off presidential election year, and that your vote means a great deal. And I'll tell you, the funding of the Dearborn Heights and the city and the city of Dearborn is really dependent. The big decision is going to happen on this Tuesday. And if you're not part of the solution, as they say, you're part of the problem. And so don't let these cities have terrible problems without input from you. If you've got a solution other than the millage proposals in both places, I'm sure they'd love to hear it. I mean, a lot of people have been debating and deliberating these issues in both cities for months now, if not years, and there's not too much way to go but to try to recapture some of the taxes that the taxpayers didn't pay on their own households. So it's going to be a challenge. It's going to be tough. But if we all participate in the system, let our opinions be known, and continue